Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Halesfast with Right on Four Corners. Today I'm talking with Rajon de Aragon about his two new books, Eerie New Mexico and New Mexico's Stolen Lands, A History of Racism, Fraud, and Deceit. Good morning, Rajon.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. I was fascinated by these two books of yours that I read, Eerie New Mexico and New Mexico's Stolen Lands. They're different. They're very different.
Yes, they are.
You really?
It's probably because I go into history, folklore, legends. I write both nonfiction and fiction, and I also write poetry.
Oh, okay. So you cover all the genres. I can tell that you have a real passion, though, for the land grant issues.
Yes, I do. That's probably because I was personally involved with the land grant movement in New Mexico, and back when I was a teenager and into my 20s, and that's pretty much what spurred on the development of this book.
New Mexico Stolen Lands. I saw the last name of yours come up in some of these older land grants that had been pretty much deceitfully taken from people.
My title is New Mexico Stolen Lands, The History of Racism, Fraud, and Deceit. And so I delved into the history of the land grants and land grant movement in New Mexico that involved not only Spanish and Mexican land grants, but also Native American lands that were taken over. And as I delved more into the issue and the history, I wound up finding out that one of the main groups was, of course, the infamous Santa Fe Ring that was centered in Santa Fe, New Mexico, back in the late 1800s and into the early 1900s. And that's the group of powerful individuals that had influence on the president of the United States at the time, and that were involved New Mexico territorial senators and many political leaders, including the territorial governors and lawmen, attorneys that were territorial attorneys. So it was a widespread group that had, like I say, powerful influence in the territory, and they were involved in land theft.
Tell the listeners a little bit of how the stealing of the land grants went on.
The interesting thing that there were many facets that were involved, including the idea that surveyors were appointed by these individuals to survey lands in New Mexico. So essentially, surveyors could be anyone that was interested in the job. And anyone that was looking for employment, and they could be a saloon keeper, be somebody walking down the street that had. The interesting thing is that these individuals had no background in surveying lands. They just had to go ahead and apply and be selected for the job. And so in many instances, individuals were selected or appointed by members of the Santa Fe Ring, and then were told, okay, we need you to go out and survey a certain piece of land that's going to be taken before territorial officials and members of the Congress, because at that time the Congress had a jurisdiction over to approval or disapproval of lands that were claimed by the Native Americans, or they were claimed through individuals through ownership of land grants that have been distributed to communities or individuals by the Spanish government or by the Mexican government. So, and if you look back in the history, many of these areas were hundreds of thousands of acres. So, they provided their claims of ownership through documents, then the lands were supposedly surveyed, and then sent into the Congress for approval or disapproval. And 500,000 acres, for example, could be cut down to 5,000 acres. And then the Congress would approve 5,000 acres out of 500,000 acres. So, these land opportunists were able to go ahead and submit homestead claims or other types of claims to the government and try to, in whichever manner whatsoever, to take over the land.
Sometimes one single piece of land would be sold three or four times.
Well, some of the so-called lawyers that came into New Mexico during that period set up office in Santa Fe and promoted themselves as experts in land grants and Indian lands. And so individuals coming in, American immigrants, were totally unaware of what was taking place in New Mexico territory. New Mexico territory at the time included Colorado, all of Arizona, some areas of Texas, some areas of Nevada, and then even some areas of California. So it was a tremendous territory. People that read or see New Mexico or study New Mexico history or look at it at that time, they think of the boundaries as they exist today. But back in those days, where the boundaries were not delineated, and it was a vast area. So. So the immigrants that were coming in that were looking for opportunities for their families and their lives were totally unaware of what was going on. So these some of these individuals were selling land that didn't belong to them. They just issued deeds.
Right. So now, what is the La Alianza Federal de las Mercedes?
Mercedes. Yes. This is a land grant group that was started by an individual by the name of Reyes Lopez Tijerina. It got very actively involved because of the injustices that were taking place against Hispanic New Mexicans in New Mexico, and that is that had been losing lands for generations, and people because back in those early days, in the 1800s, late 1800s and into the 1900s, agriculture was a big thing in New Mexico, of course, and farming and ranching communities. And some of these opportunists that came in were illegally confiscating lands and taking them over. And it could just happen from one day to the next when they would... ranchers that had gunslingers that they would hire, back them up, would put up barbed wire fences around the territory. And in the early days for Native Americans and Spanish, all areas were open for hunting and grazing, and also for the Native Americans, there were spiritual lands that they were ancient and were, you know, that had always been open, and they could go ahead and have their religious ceremonies on those lands or whatever. But then these individuals went ahead and started introduced to something new that came in from the east, and that was barbed wire.
So what's happening now? Has this all been rectified, or is there still issues?
No, it has never been rectified.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it was interesting that just in the news a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you saw... on the New Mexico news that there was this Native American that went to the Petroglyph National Monument here in Albuquerque.
Right.
And was traveling along the trail and then went off the trail to because it had always been part of the Pueblo spiritual lands. And then so he was there trying to do part of a ceremony, a spiritual ceremony from his ancestors, and And, of course, he was tased and arrested.
Right.
So this isn't something that's been cleared up. Native Americans are going through this. And of course, poverty in New Mexico New Mexico ranks around, I don't know, it's 49th in the nation as far as poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes all the way back to the taking over of farming and ranching land and lands that were taken over by the government and then leased to corporations. For example, oil that was discovered on those land grants that belonged to the people and belonged to communities. Timber, for example, the hunting grounds that have been open for centuries were closed up, and people couldn't go in there and hunt without a permit.
Right. Some shady deals going on. And you researched this really in depth, so I can tell you were passionate about it.
And as a young teenager, I got involved with, back in the 1960s, when I graduated from high school, civil rights movements were taking place all over the United States. And that was Dr. Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez in California, Andrés Tijerina in New Mexico. I usually refer to them as social justice and civil rights leaders, as a triad.
Right.
Because there were three of them. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has always been widely acknowledged, of course, and Cesar Chavez. But fortunately, Ernesto López Tijerina usually isn't placed in that same group. But it was the three of them that worked together and that were actively involved for social justice issues. And it was a tremendous civil rights movement that was all over the United States to rectify injustices of the past.
We could go on and on about this. I think that your book, though, really covers it and will really make people aware of the issues in it.
Well, one of the things that being born in New Mexico and growing up in New Mexico and attending New Mexico schools, there were many things that wound up influencing my career as a writer and things that I always read as I read history, to give you an example, my mother always talked about some of these things when I was a kid, and she talked about Padre Martinez and that he was a great folk hero of our people, and then I read Death Comes for the Archbishop by Willa Chapter in college, and it contradicted everything that I had heard from her.
Right.
And then I thought that it was an historical novel, but it was an historical novel where Bishop Lamy, the first bishop of New Mexico, was called Father Valiant, another way of saying valiant.
Right.
So there were the progenitors. He and his vicar general, and they were the heroes, and the other priests were the antagonists, and he was coming to improve civilization in New Mexico, and the horrendous things were taking place. In fact, the author wound up using derogatory terms in her book about people in New Mexico.
Right.
And elevating terms for the heroic bishop, and use the actual names of Padre Martinez and other priests that were involved at the time. So then I wound up researching it further, and then what I read is that some historians were even praising the book, recommending it as a source material for anyone studying the history of New Mexico, without pointing out that it was an historical novel.
Right.
Made up.
Novel, keyword there, right. Fiction.
Fictional.
Exactly.
This was fiction. I wound up doing further research and everything that I wound up writing a book, Padre Martinez and Bishop Lamy, that was became nationally recognized. And I was in my 20s at the time, but as a university student, I felt like I needed to do something about it, and that wasn't the only thing. But I read from many different historians that when the Spanish came into the New Mexico and the New World, they were only interested in God, glory, and gold. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, about two or three weeks ago, I heard this individual that was being interviewed on TV. The Spanish were only interested in God, glory, and gold. Wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
Whoever came up with that phrase back in the 1800s is being continues to be repeated. Just like the conquest of New Mexico is a bloodless conquest. Somebody wrote that back in the 1800s after a Mexican-American war, and there was certainly not a bloodless conquest.
No
I
kidding.
Did a research for another book. Hundreds of people died.
Yes, blood was spilled.
Yes.
So you have a lot of books on your plate, and I really liked this Erie, New Mexico one.
Uh-huh.
That was fascinating, all the depth of paranormal.
Yes, a lot of things that we would call eerie in New Mexico that are unexplained, but not only in New Mexico, but throughout the world. And in New Mexico, I wound up researching some of these beliefs and ideas that have been handed down from one generation to the next. It's fascinating.
It is.
Extremely fascinating because some of these things are being explored by other by scientists and those that are diving into those areas. And for example, there's the bolas de lumbre, orbs of fire,
right.
Or luminous orbs that have been seen in New Mexico, that it was talked about in the folklore,
right.
And through legends and myths. And I wound up finding out that the Native Americans was passed down from one generation to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't just a phenomenon appearing in New Mexico, but throughout the world. The only reason I got interested in that is because as a kid, you know, my mother, like I said, talked about Venus as a folk hero in New Mexico, so I researched that. And she talked about, interestingly, I'm originally from Las Vegas, New Mexico, and she when we drive by a certain area, she would point out some hills and say, that's an area where these balls of fire or luminous balls appear at night. And you know what it is, son? She told me it's witches that turn themselves into balls of fire and they go out dancing.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was kind of interesting as a kid. And my dad would tell me an opposite story, and that is that he would tell me, if you ever see bola de lumbre, this ball of fire, this luminous orb that appears, you have to follow it. Because in our what they have always said is that they will lead you to a treasure wherever it goes down. I wound up writing this book here in New Mexico, and that's one of the areas that I covered. Interestingly, what I wound up finding out is that this is a natural phenomenon that appears that scientists cannot explain.
Right.
They don't deny it now. They know it exists because fighter pilots during World War II would see them, and they would follow these orbs would follow their plane, and they would be seeing them. Alongside the aircraft or behind them, and then suddenly would disappear. So they call them by different names. So I just call them by different names. They call them lightning balls or, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Back in World War II, they called them, pilots called them Foo Fighters, and then they were also referred to as St. Elmo's Fire, which I thought was pretty interesting. In New Mexico, of course, Bola de Lumbre, a young boy growing up and becoming a teenager and a young adult, I would always think to myself, well, seeing is believing. And I wound up seeing two of them.
Oh, wow.
One in Los Angeles, New Mexico, at a home that floated into the house.
Wow.
And was just moving along silently, about the size of a basketball, and glowing, and then it went right through the wall.
Wow.
And I saw one in Albuquerque at the Bosque that was about 4 or 5 feet in diameter, and I knew what it was when I saw it. You know, it's but interestingly, scientists say that they are related to rainstorms. And lightning, and that's when they think they appear. But the thing is that the one I saw at night was clear night sky outside, and then the other one was a clear blue sky during the evening. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. I wound up finding out when I did my research that 3% of the population on the Earth has experienced them.
Would you like to read something for us?
Yes, this is something that I wrote on that from my research. I put, an all-night vigil was being held at the Santuario de Chimayón near Espadilla. The famous religious sanctuary was built around 1819. It is said the Spanish colonial-style mission church has a miraculous fall of sacred soil that never empties, no matter how much of the dirt is removed. The soil is said to cure illnesses. Many crippled pilgrims claimed they were cured completely at the Santuario when medical science could do nothing for them. These devoted faithful left crutches hung on the walls to prove it. The ailing, the weak, the religious, and the curious come here. Contact with the earth cures those who are in need of physical and spiritual help. The devout also venerate a special image of El Santo Niño de Atocha, the Holy Child of Atocha here. According to legend, Spanish knights were being held in a prison by the Moorish in Atocha, Spain, around the 12th century. These poor soldiers were dying from thirst and hunger. One day, a young boy carrying a basket of bread and a gourd filled with water appeared. Since he was a child, the Moors led him into the prison. He gave the prisoners bread and water, saving them. The bread did not run out, and neither did the water. People believed it was the Christ child who had appeared. At the Santuario, a wood image of the Holy Child produced by an early Santero was venerated. Miracles were attributed to this figure. For example, they said the image would become animated at night, traveling around at the countryside and performing acts of mercy and miracles for those in need. The child would wear ox shoes while doing these wonderful deeds and then return to the Santuario when he was done. Worn-out shoes were replaced every year. The Sierra Dolores accompanied the family on their annual pilgrimage to the Santuario during the devotional preparation for the Christmas season. The small church was filled to capacity. People were even standing on the sides and in the back, lit candles flicker on the walls, casting mysterious shadows from the wooden samples. There was a large thunderstorm outside and flashing lightning. Everyone was completely silent when the large wooden doors of the church were blown open. Suddenly, a luminous sphere, the size of a basketball, flew in. It traveled up the aisle and whirled around near the altar. Hearts were frozen as a silent glowing ball that was stationary. And then, just as suddenly, flew back up the doorway, pandemonium followed in the Santuario. It is estimated that only 3% of the world's population has experienced these strange jolts of fire or light. On December 24, 1726, the London Journal reported a sighting on the sloop Catherine Mary. John Howell was on board, stated, "As we were coming through the Gulf of Florida on the 29th of August, 1726, when a large ball of fire fell from the element," that was the name of the ship, "and split our mast in 10,000 pieces. If it were possible, split our main beam, also 3 planks to the side, underwater, and 3 of the deck." Round luminous objects that appear quickly and without warning have been reported for centuries in New Mexico and around the world. Accounts have described these orbs as perplexing, weird, and sometimes deadly. Scientists have used terms such as globe lightning, lightning balls, and ball lightning to describe this phenomena, which have an unknown origin. Sightings of these lighter spheres rank with UFOs and defy complete explanation for their appearance. They have been described as pea-sized to several meters in diameter. A handful of reports say the balls eventually explode, leaving behind an odor of sulfur, a pale yellow natural non-metallic element. These thought-provoking forms stimuli that are need to know more, so scientists have offered hypotheses about their existence. During World War II, pilots reported fast-moving, small, round, glowing objects that followed their aircraft. These made wild and rapid turns and changed direction before they disappeared. The balls of light appear so often and travel in such strange trajectories that American pilots called them Foo Fighters. And it's interesting that during World War II, they thought that it was something being done by Hitler's Nazis to use as a weapon against American fighter pilots and British fighter pilots and others. And when I was doing my research, I talked to many different people that that claimed that they actually saw them, or they knew that there was somebody in their family that had seen these kind of like UFOs. And the Roswell incident,
right,
from back in 1947, but stories that go back for generations,
right,
from among Native Americans. And you know, it's all exciting and interesting to me as a researcher and a historian to delve into subjects that are usually not covered by others. And that haven't been researched or written about.
So what's next?
My next book is, they'll be coming out in late spring or early summer, is on the El Camino Real de la Tierra Adentro, or the Tierra Adentro, the Camino Real from Mexico City to New Mexico, that existed for over 200 years, where there was the transportation and commerce into the territory that went all the way to Santa Fe. You know, it was dated all the way from 1598 when Oñate first came in with the colonizers, and commerce and people that traveled the trail, so that's the history that I'm exploring and going into.
That's amazing. You're a busy guy with research and writing, aren't you? You've got how many books out now?
20 books. When I finish one, as I'm finishing one project, I come up with an idea for another one.
So you just keep working on. Do you ever work on two at the same time?
Sometimes I have. Yes, I drop one and put that away for a while, and work on the other one. And then when I get back to the first one, I have a fresh idea that I wouldn't have had initially. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that as a writer and historian,
mm-hmm,
I never go by what other people have written in the past, because usually what I've seen is that other writers that follow keep on repeating what has been written before.
Right.
Which is interesting, you know.
Right.
We just keep on going back to the thing that was written before by another writer. In my books, I try to delve into actual documents and the words from the people of the time.
One thing I noticed in both of the books, you have a lot of quotes from original sources.
Yes.
They were both full of information that I hadn't been familiar with.
Yes, and rather than my being an interpreter of history, because most historians interpret the history, and then they use their own biases to follow through with. And one time, many years ago, I was called a revisionist historian in the United States. When I read that, I thought, why is this individual saying that I'm a revisionist historian? And then I read some other comments that some weren't very nice. And I thought to myself, yes, I am a revisionist historian. I am revising history to tell the truth and the actual history and that has been perpetuated and written about and glorified.
Right.
It's totally contradictory to what the actual events took place and the history that took place.
And that was Ray John de Aragon talking about his new books, Eerie New Mexico and New Mexico's Stolen Lands, A History of Racism, Fraud, and Deceit. You can read about Ray John in April's Albuquerque Journal. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.